to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working from home on this pre-recorded program, very remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, February 2nd, 2021. 6 people were killed in Warab State during an intercommunal clashes.
6 people were killed, that include a police officer identified as Deng Madud Magog, rank of major. The fighting continued for several hours around the town before the area youth repulsed the attackers.
And the Jeng Council of Elders say the transitional government of national unity is not serious about peace in South Sudan.
We are worried that this is something that is hanging around. It is only effective in the fact that there is ceasefire only. But in spite of ceasefire, there are disturbances which is everywhere in Upper Nile, in Barbiga, and even in Equatoria.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations says violations against children in South Sudan have reduced since 2018 because of the September 2018 peace agreement and an action plan signed by the UN and various armed groups in the country to protect children. Virginia Gambas, Special Representative of the United Nations Secretary General on Children in Armed Conflict, says more than 2,000 children were released from ranks of armed forces between 2018 and 2019. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
The report of the UN Secretary General on Children and Armed Conflict in South Sudan covers the period from July 2018 through June 2020. Virginia Gamba, a special representative of the Secretary General on Children in Armed Conflict, tells South Sudan in Focus her report focuses on 6 grave violations committed against children.
The 6 we are covering are recruitment and use of children, killing and maiming of children, sexual violence, including rape against children. We have as well abduction. We have attacks on schools and hospitals. We have denial of humanitarian access. So these are the 6.
In 2017, South Sudan recorded one of the highest number of violations against children among some 20 countries Gamba's office was following. Gamba traveled to South Sudan and engaged parties who were negotiating the September 2018 peace deal and intervened early to make sure child protection provisions were included in the soon-to-be-signed revitalized agreement on the resolution of the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan.
The specific provisions are very simple. It basically says that during the discussions on the peace agreement and before even the peace agreement was signed, consideration must be given on what would happen with children that are currently associated to armed groups. And it would, in the peace agreement is the language or the text asking for the release of these children and the handing over of these children to reintegration offices such as those run by UNICEF in the country.
Gamba says since that time, there has been a significant decline in those violations, and more than 2,000 children were freed from the armed groups, including the South Sudan People's Defense Forces and the SPLA in opposition led by Riek Machar, now South Sudan's first vice president.
We can see a continued decrease between 2018 and 2019 because of these peace discussions, the peace agreement that was being created, plus the decision of the government to enter into a signed action plan with us to end and prevent all 6 violations.
Aside from the child protection provisions in South Sudan's peace agreement, Gamba says, a joint action plan to end and prevent all grave violations against children was signed by the government, the SPLA in opposition, and South Sudan Opposition Alliance in January 2020. But she says the parties must do more to make sure all provisions are fully implemented.
And in a country that is devastated, it's very hard both to implement as well as to follow through and oversight that process. So a lot that needs to be done is actually implementing what was agreed. That's one item that still is very much pending. We're seeing progress, but not fast enough.
The UN official says despite this progress, more than 700 grave violations against children were committed in South Sudan, with Central Equatoria State being the most affected region. Most violations were attributed to the SPLA-IO and government security forces, including the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. She says a recent uptick in intercommunal violence in South Sudan may also increase the potential of violations against children committed by non-state actors. Gamba is urging all donor governments and members of the UN Security Council to provide additional funding to help end and prevent violations against children and to provide child protection services to children in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Authorities in Warab State say 6 people were killed and dozens of others injured during intercommunal violence on Saturday and Sunday. The Tonch North County Police Commissioner says civilians have fled their homes and are hiding in the bush. Aleu Ayen Aleu, the newly appointed governor of Warab State, says his first priority is to end the violence by arresting the culprits and in criminal activity and returning stolen cattle to their rightful owners. For VOA News, Daniel Maringwek reports from Juba.
The police commissioner for Tony North County, Lieutenant Colonel John Gabriel Deng, says the fighting took place in Quail Village, about 25 kilometers from Warab Town, on Saturday and Sunday. Deng says armed youth from 2 communities attack another community in the same area to revenge an earlier killing.
6 people were killed, that include a police officer identified as Deng Madut Magog, rank of major. The fighting continued for several hours around the town before the area youth repulsed the attackers. Many people have been displaced and cattle were also stolen during the fight. The situation is not good as people are still hiding in the bush.
Deng says authorities have deployed security posts around Warab Town to prevent further clashes. He says fighting continued on Tuesday in Awul, an area located 3 kilometers from Warab Town, where there is no mobile phone service. The newly appointed governor of Warab State, Aleu Ayen Aleu, says the ongoing violence is connected to cattle raiding, revenge attacks, and land disputes. Aleu, a former interior minister and a member of parliament, says he hopes to end the criminal activity in the area by arresting the criminals and returning cattle and other stolen property to the rightful owners. He says he will also strengthen the rule of law and engage young people in vocational training and farming activities.
To be able to do that, you need a holistic approach. Now, once you have arrested, security is all about enforcing law and order in the first place. I may go and do it in 1 month. There must be alternatives. So once you remove the criminality, then what are you doing to the people? It must be followed with services.
Once the criminals are arrested, Aleu says he believes ordinary citizens will be willing to hand over their guns in a feasible disarmament program. Aleu attributes ongoing intercommunal violence in parts of Warab State to the absence of strong law enforcement and the proliferation of guns in the hands of civilians. He also says delays in setting up a full transitional government, including at the local level, makes it difficult to enforce law and order.
What is happening down is the absence of governance at the local level. It is not so powerful that to address the onslaught of economic situation and environmental issues that have arisen in the rural areas. Taking this as criminality alone is not correct. There are environmental, social and political reasons that have caused that one.
Aleu says he will work with South Sudan partners to restore lasting peace and harmony in Warab State.
So I'm going now actually with the problem that have been identified, with the directives of what I'm going to do and with the support I need to address that problem. The first priority is security, is to stem out criminality. One of my missions I'm going in here, I want to engage UNMISS because they have the experience. They have the money to do this job with the help of us.
Hundreds of people have been killed, injured and displaced from their homes due to intercommunal conflicts in Tony according to local authorities. Between June and December of 2020, more than 180 people were killed in Tony East County alone. Tony community leaders are holding a two-day peace conference in Juba to try to come up with solutions to end persistent conflicts in the area. For BOA News, Daniel Marengwek in Juba.
A tribal council in South Sudan, known as the Jiang Council of Elders, says the transitional government of national unity is fragmented and its ability to implement the country's peace agreement on time is in great doubt. The spokesperson of the Jiang Council of Elders, Aldo Ajo, says his group is worried the signatories of the 2018 revitalized peace agreement will not accomplish the tasks specified in the agreement on time. Ajo says, although a ceasefire is holding across the country, reports of fighting in parts of Central Equatorial and Upper Nile states is a bad sign.
Our stand has always been not to declare war, but we were saying that we were seeking peace, and that's why we went to Nairobi and met the Nuer group in 2015 with Arab Moi, and we came together with Riyadh and ourselves. We met. We wanted really to get the people together so that we have peace. We have been involved in that. Right now, the situation is different. The parties that were in war have concluded an agreement on 12th of September 2018. They signed this agreement, the revitalized agreement. And this agreement, we supported it, and we took it as the only option left for South Sudan to come together and get peace going.
Let me take you back. You were saying your group, the Jiang Council of Elders, is now for peace. But I can remember very well in 2015, you decided to go against an agreement that was signed by the parties, that is the revitalized peace agreement. Why are you changing now?
No, we're not comfortable with the first one, 2015. Because the 2015 gave South Sudan two armies. There is no country in Africa with two armies. So we actually strictly pointed out that is a division which is not even clear in one country. If you are one, then how do you start two armies? It was not safe, and that is what we say about it.
A lot of people who are watching and monitoring this agreement have said the agreement is going nowhere. Its implementation is very slow. Recently, African Union and IGAD envoys visited training camps and they came back calling for a speedy implementation of this agreement. What is the stand of the Jiang Council of Elders on this revitalized peace agreement?
We are saying this, that the parties in the agreement are not clearly committed to the agreement itself they have signed. The implementation metrics are not going as required. Now we are speaking that in chapter 1 or chapter 2, and the time is going. There are 3 years to complete the things that they can do before agreement, including constitution. Now, we don't see that going. And we are worried also, besides commitment, the leaders have not reconciled. They are moving perilously and they are in one cabinet. So somebody like me with experience, I have never seen a cabinet where people are indifferent and they say they are running one government. What is the inclusivity and what is the collective decision of the government? And what is the obligation of ministers when something is decided to be done? They don't defend the cabinet together. So we are worried that this is something that is hanging around. It is only effective in the fact that there is ceasefire holding. But in spite of ceasefire, there are skirmishes which is everywhere in Upper Nile, in Barghazal, and even in Equatoria. The thing has not been put together properly, and we are worried. We are elders, and we feel that we have children we are leaving behind, and we cannot keep fighting.
Talking about your worries on this agreement, I remember interviewing almost every South Sudanese who has rebelled from Juba, and I can count them by names. I interviewed Dr. Lama Kol, I interviewed Pagana Moon, who was the former secretary of SPLM. I interviewed Thomas Cirillo, who left the army. I interviewed the former governor of Western Equatoria, Joseph Pakasoro. All of them have been saying, and this is on record, that the government in Juba is the government of Jeng Council of Elders. And you're telling me your group has not been part of the government. Could you clarify that?
They were wrong. We never ran a government. They were completely wrong, and they were covering something. They were the ones who actually departed and divided the party, SPLM. And they were the ones who started fighting in the army. And they fall down on internet group. We did not start any war with NUAC. That is, they are covering up, and they were the one involved when they divided. Now it is proven that the cause of war itself was SPLM. And those who fought the war and splintered in the parties, all these parties in the government are splintered from the SPLM. So we are actually a scapegoat of the criminals that actually made the war. We are not going to accept it. We have proved that they have lied, and that's why they did not give message to the world exactly the fact of how they started the fighting. They fought the war, and they signed the agreement, and they now form the government together. We are not in the government. Yes, we supported Salva Kiir, and that is natural. And some of the elders supported the rebellion. That is natural. So when there is fighting, there are two divided, and that's what happened. How did we cause the war? That is their propaganda, and it did not work.
Uncle Aldo Ajo, it's always good to refer to the past in order to heal the wounds of the future. You have in the past said the Jeng Council of Elders is non-partisan, it's not affiliated to any group, and it is just a community group. But today, you are admitting that the Jeng Council of Elders stood with the government, and that is the government under the presidency of Salva Kiir during the conflict. In essence, you took sides in the conflict. How do you react to that?
No, all of us were not SPLM. We did not fuel the war. We supported the then fighting government. We were not actually in the SPLM. We were not in any leadership. The two guys only as a scapegoat, and the two guys only to tell the world that there is danger. Our intention was to defend the state, because it is our obligation and it is obligatory to any citizen of any country to see that when his or her country is in crisis, they prevail as either individually or in a group. Nothing that can prevent us from that. And they want us to be quiet. So that was their mission, to get Salva Kiir and brand Salva Kiir as a Denka. Salva Kiir was not elected by Denka.
That's Aldo Ajo, spokesperson for the Jeng Council of Elders. He spoke with me from Juba on Monday. In the second part of this interview, Ajo speaks about the future of South Sudan. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
can you forgive and forget?
It depends. Like, it depends on the situation or the fault that you did for me. Sometimes I forgive and forget. Other times I can't forget. I forgive, but I can't forget.
Yes, of course I forgive and I forget. First of all, if I forgive, my mind becomes clear to each and everything.
Of course I can forgive and forget. Reason being, there are very many people who harm us, but we shouldn't always keep it at heart.
Forgiving helps because sometimes we overlook some other things, because if, for instance, I do not forgive and forget, then what if the same applies to me?
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday health segment, Ghana has launched a comprehensive reproductive, maternal, newborn, child and adolescent health and nutrition strategic plan aimed at increasing equitable access to services for women, adolescents and children by 2030. Mavis Ochiri has more from Joso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
The five-year framework seeks to provide strategic direction for healthcare providers and other stakeholders to end the preventable deaths of women, newborns, children, and adolescents and protect their health. Dr. Issa is a director of Family Health Division of the Ghana Health Service, which in the past had drawn up separate plans for health and nutrition care for mothers and children. However, he says the country needed a comprehensive plan to move forward in the medium to long term. He says the new strategic plan aligns with the World Health Organization's global strategy for women, children, and adolescent health. ISSA says the plan also seeks to make sure the country is able to provide responsive clinical and public health emergency services to cope with the outbreak of COVID-19 pandemic.
To achieve the vision and the goal, we need universal access to better manage quality services. This plan also seeks to make sure that we are able to provide responsive clinical and public health emergency services when there's a humanitarian emergency, such as this pandemic or any other things which will arise. So, and eventually that women, babies and children not only survive deaths and disabilities,
he says in spite of the progress the country has made, 52 children out of every 1,000 live births will die before their fifth birthday, most of them dying before their first birthday. That is down from 82 children dying under the age of 5 in 2007. He says data show that from 2007 to 2017, Ghana reduced the number of mothers who die from pregnancy related causes to 310 for every 100,000 live births, down from 378. Dr. Issa attributed the gains to the community-based health planning services, which brought healthcare services closer to communities, as well as the introduction of free maternal care through the National Health Insurance Program. Although Ghana does not expect to eliminate all maternal and child deaths, Dr. Issa says the new plan should drastically reduce them to a point where they are no longer a public health concern. He applauded the World Health Organization, the United Nations Children Fund, and other organizations for supporting Ghana's efforts in providing services to women, children, and adolescents to sustain the gains made in reducing maternal and child deaths. Dr. Issa says Ghana's government needs a political will to make sure that women, children, and adolescents have access to good quality health services and are protected from poverty, hunger, and abuse.
Also, there are certain activities where indirectly they go to impinge on maternal and child health. Such that you will find that if there are child protection laws, gender-based protection laws and everything, these all go to empower the women, the children, and then they are able to live in an enabling environment, and definitely they are able to access service and then to be able to survive.
ISSA says Ghana should find innovative ways to make sure that resources are well utilized in an integrated manner. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Ochiri in Jaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
From Ghana, we move to Uganda, where opposition leader Robert Kyagulanyi, also known as Bobi Wine, on Monday filed a petition contesting the January 14 re-election of President Yoweri Museveni. Wine's lawyers say they want the court to nullify the election, but also ensure Museveni, who won sixth term in office, can never run again. For VOA News, Alima Athomani reports from Kampala.
Ali. on Monday, just a little after 1 p.m. local time. Lawyers representing opposition leader Bobi Wine walked to the Supreme Court and submitted volumes of documents they say prove why the January 14th election should be nullified. Lead lawyer Medad Segona says soldiers were seen invading polling stations and stuffing pre-ticked ballots into ballot boxes to inflate Museveni's vote totals. He argues that for decades, President Museveni and his backers have used intimidation and fraud to ensure victory.
You saw how the entire electoral process turned into a situation of terror. You get to the inevitable conclusion that he's the commonest and only common denominator in the electoral violence in our history. And therefore you know that any election that Museveni participates in can never be a peaceful election, can never be a free and fair election demanded by the Constitution of the Republic.
Official election results showed Museveni winning a sixth term with 58% of the votes. Wine came in second with 35%. Segona says Wine's National Unity Platform Party encountered challenges at every step of the election process, including the beating of Wine supporters and campaign officials. The challenges continued into their efforts to file the petition.
They were arresting, torturing and beating our coordinators wherever they would find them with DRA forms. They went to where we were photocopying form, arrested the person photocopying and took them. The same uncivilized group came and took over our offices in Kamwocha. We cannot access some of the documents. And they thought rather mischievously that way we would not be able to file this petition. I can tell you, we have filed it.
Justin Lumumba, the Secretary General of the ruling National Resistance Movement Party, says their lawyer is checking through the declaration forms from polling stations, which show how many votes the party's candidates received at each station.
We have a declaration form for the presidential from the National Electoral Commission, and when we are served, we shall respond.
This will be the fourth time that Museveni's election is challenged in court. Kizza Besigye contested Museveni's election after the 2001 and 2006 elections. Former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi challenged the 2016 election results. The two former friends of Museveni both lost, with the court ruling that even though there were several irregularities, they were not substantial enough to nullify the election. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
We love to hear what you think about this show. Send us your brief comments about issues in our news or what is happening in your area. Our WhatsApp number is +12026308011. We will air your comments every Friday. That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with a traditional Baka song from my village in Maridi County of Western Equatoria State. Listening to a traditional Baka song from Maridi County. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Man,
love can never.